You are listening to CICK 93.9 FM Smithers Community Radio. This is Nerding Out with Laura, and we are broadcasting from the train car located on unceded Cassia territory of the Gidimden Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. It is May 31st. We are heading into June, and this weekend is Pride. It's Pride Month coming, and there's going to be some great events happening tomorrow in Smithers downtown that I encourage you to check out. I believe there's a story time at 9 a.m. at the library, and then at noon there's going to be a booth set up on the street, and there's going to be music at Bovell Square. So I really encourage everyone to come check it out. And in honor of this weekend, I'm going to do a queer-themed episode today. We are going to talk about some fantastically gay animals. Woohoo! Last year, I did an episode on queer representation in science, so you can check that out on smithersradio.com. You just go to the schedule, click on Nerding Out with Laura, and all of my past episodes are uploaded there for you to enjoy. So when you think of gay, queer, homosexual behaviors in nature, you know, you may have never heard of such a thing. Or maybe you recall some male penguins that were raising an egg together. I believe there was a book about that for kids many years back. Maybe you've heard a song inspired by lesbian seagulls living off the California coast. So let me tell you some stories, some ecology, some science, some oppression and suppression stories. And but first, let's listen to a song, the Lesbian Seagull Song by Tom Wilson. Enjoy.
She flies so gracefully over rocks, trees, and sand. Soaring over cliffs and gently floating down to land. She proudly lifts her voice to sound the mating call. And soon her mate responds by singing,
caw, caw, caw.
Come with me, lesbian seagull. Settle down and rest with me. Fly with me, lesbian seagull, to my little nest by the sea. With me, that's where you belong. With me, I know I can be strong as long as you're with. She skims the water at their mealtime to see a fish, and she emerges with one squirming in her beak. She plays among the waves and hides between the swells. She walks the beach at twilight searching for some shells. Come with me, lesbian seagull. Settle down and rest with me. Fly with me, lesbian seagull, to my little nest by the sea. With me, that's where you belong. With me, I know I can be strong as long as you're. Setting sun. She looks at her as if to say, the day is done. It's time to find their shelter hidden in the dunes and fall asleep amidst the music of the loons. Come with me, lesbian seagull. Settle down and rest with me. Fly with me, lesbian seagull. To my little nest by the sea. With me, that's where you belong with me. I know I can be strong as long as you're with me. You and me, lesbian seagull. We'll just watch the world go by. Just you and me, lesbian seagull. Side by side we'll be till we die. You and I, we can make it if we try. Our love will keep us flying high until we die.
You are listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. You just heard Lesbian Seagulls by Tom Wilson. So this song came out in 1979, and it was written and recorded by Australian-born musician Tom Wilson Weinberg. And this was inspired by the 1977 study that observed monogamous lesbian behavior in 14% of the seagulls on Santa Barbara Island. And this was a really groundbreaking study, as it was one of the first documented cases of homosexual behavior in wild animals. And it sparked significant controversy. They had trouble publishing. They were asked to get the researchers, the married couple who studied these gulls on this barren island. They gathered all their data. They tried to publish in the ornithology journal. They said, ooh, I don't know. This is really weird. How about you go back and get more data? And so they did. They went back and they spent a couple more years, and then they published in the even bigger journal, Science, and rocked the world. Some funding was temporarily cut from science organizations by conservative groups who argued that homosexuality was unnatural and not found in nature. So this study was a significant moment for the LGBTQ+ community, as it provided evidence that same-sex relationships are a natural occurrence. And I'm going to bring up a new term, at least new to me. Maybe it's not new to you, which case, congratulations. But it's queer ecology. And queer, non-heterosexual, and non-cisgendered. So cis is the sort of gender that you are born with. If you were born and assigned a certain biological sex at birth and you remain identifying as that gender, then you are cisgendered as opposed to transgendered. And so queer people face daily discrimination and oppression. But this can be overt, such as violence, or it can be insidious, sneaking into our social and cultural norms and permeating the way we subconsciously think and feel about the world. And queer ecology is a scientific theory that aims to bring together queer theory and ecology to shift our understanding of the world away from these binary, one or the other, rigid and heteronormative ways of understanding nature and move us toward interdependency and fluidity. The assumed heterosexuality in biology has been the baseline for studies for centuries. The inherent queerness of nature has for a long time been ignored, suppressed, and dismissed to reflect our society's underlying bias against non-heterosexual and non-cisgender identities. So we've taken our own human hang-ups and applied them to the natural world. But the natural world don't care. It's very queer. In nature, both gender and sex are fluid among a large array of fauna and flora. And I'm going to get into a little bit of that today. There's far too much to cover, so maybe we'll do a couple episodes. We'll see. Queer ecology also kind of takes the idea of reproduction as the main reason for sexual and romantic relationships as reductive. So it limits our objective scientific understanding of nature and fuels anti-queer rhetoric in Western social norms. So animals aren't all about evolution and reproduction, just the same as humans. I think the Darwinian evolution is important and it helps us understand the world around us, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Not everything has to be about reproduction to gain benefits in a society, whether human or animal. And what we see is that our understanding of nature becomes the baseline for what we believe to be natural, but also what we believe to be moral or good behavior. But when we approach biology as fluid instead of fixed, we can re-examine that understanding. Some people call this a cultural boomerang when we interpret nature based on our inherent biases and then use that biased understanding of nature to then defend and justify those societal biases that we have. So we're saying nature must be heterosexual because we believe it is right. And then we only see that behavior. We ignore that other behaviors in animals. And then we use that as justification for our original statement. It's not a very scientific way of being. So in queer ecology, in practice, it means changing our language and our scientific theories to reflect the true nature of nature. When we rid ourselves of rigid oppressive thought processes and create awareness and understanding that queerness is a natural part of nature and human behavior, it's not an anomaly, but it's a natural way of existing. So how did this start? Let's go way back, the Middle Ages, I believe 13th century. Thomas Aquinas was a priest and philosopher who really championed the idea that, as he called it, unisexual love, which that they used instead of homosexual, as unnatural and a crime against nature. And this really became a popular stance. Before that, you know, with the Bible and everything, there was some looking down upon gayness, but it wasn't really a big legal standpoint. But after that point, it started showing up in laws and prosecuted. So the oppression really ramped up with that idea that queerness is not natural. And before that, like way back in Aristotle times, you know, he observed pigeons that had same-sex pairs. There was record of nature being quite queer. But then after that 13th century, we saw all the records of queer behavior in nature just disappear. Like nobody observed anything. Strange. I guess it just didn't exist, perhaps, or it just wasn't written down. And it wasn't until this 1977 study of seagulls that this idea was really challenged. And I want to do a shout out. I'm getting a lot of my information in this section here from a couple of different podcasts that I listen to kind of get ready for this topic. One of them is You're Wrong About. That's the title, You Are Wrong About. And they did an episode last Pride on that's called Lesbian Seagulls. It's really good. And they also had the host from Radiolab, who did an episode just called Seagulls, where they actually interviewed the Hunts, who had done the seagull study originally. So please check those out if you want to hear a little bit more of that discussion. And I'm going to take some notes from them, and then also a book that was recommended, a whopping 900-page book that's fascinating. I just started reading yesterday, so I'm not going to get into all 900 pages, but it's called Biological Exuberance. It came out in 1999, and it's about animal homosexuality and natural diversity. It was written by Bruce Bagamil, And what he did is look at for the few scant scientific records of homosexual or queerness in nature that had been published, and then also just like cold called a bunch of biologists and asked them, hey, you know, did you ever observe this but never publish it or never write it down, or was it refused? You can go back and look at the original manuscripts for many scientific publications where the queer observations were just crossed out and just, you know, thought too odd, and we won't publish that. Or the scientist notes contain observations of queerness. One researcher even wrote his notes in Greek because he was worried about scandalizing his young research assistants with the gayness that he was observing in sheep. Because he wouldn't dare publish it, but he did want to take thorough notes. So he wrote them in Greek. He was not Greek, and to try and obscure that so nobody else could see. And so there are some different ways that this information can be left out of the scientific record. And one of those podcasts termed it the taxonomy of suppression, which I love that. Or taxonomy, I should pronounce that correctly. So first we have the Noah's Ark bias, as they called it. So most animals out there look the same whether you're male or female, just from first glance. So that's called sexual monomorphism. So if you look at Canada geese, you can't tell which ones are female or male just from a first glance. Same with the seagulls. They actually had to dissect their one of their first mating pairs to realize that they were both female. And so if it's not obvious, say with like lions, lions are sexually dimorphic. So the males have the big mane, or a lot of bird species do have that sexual dimorphism where it's really easy to see, oh, that one's a male, that one's a female. Oh, look, they're mating together. Okay, I see a heterosexual mating. But in pairs that are monomorphic, they both look the same, someone who assumes that queerness is not part of nature would see two animals engaging in a relationship and think, oh, they must be a male-female pair, when in fact they were not. They were either male-male or female-female, or even all sorts of other things that I'll get into. So that's the first one, just assuming that what we see is heterosexual when it may be not be. The second is self-suppression. So like I said about the researcher who wrote his notes in Greek because he knew that it was too, or thought it was too scandalous. So they observe queerness in nature, but they don't report it or they don't publish it because they don't want to ruin their career. Like those seagull scientists got a lot of flack, a lot of pushback, and were in the media spotlight, in which they probably didn't enjoy because of this study. So someone may observe it and think, well, I don't want to stir that up, so I'm just going to keep it a secret. Or they may feel like, this is a funny example, there was this 60s wild sheep researcher who later in life confessed that he found as many as 8% of the males in the populations he was studying would only mate with other males. So they were quite homosexual. But he didn't want to publish it because he thought he would defile the reputation of the majestic sheep if he published such a terrible thing in his mind. So that's self-suppression. Then there's overt suppression. So back in 1911, we're going back to our penguins here, there was a scientist who found that the penguins he was studying were quite gay, were quite queer. They had many same-sex couples. This person tried to publish this, and the scientific society forced him to cut it out. And they're actually, the original manuscript is on record with that section crossed out. Because they thought that was too scandalous. We can't print that. Even in the 1980s, there was orca research that found they were quite queer, and that got redacted from the journals that it was published in. So it's not just back in the early 1900s. It's only, you know, a couple decades ago where people thought, oh, let's just cut that out. And the fourth one, which I think is very insidious and also kind of hilarious, is using language to report on queerness but still label it unnatural. So such terms such as titles would be sexual perversion in male ostriches, or aberrant sexual behavior, a note on the apparent lowering in the sexual standards of whatever animal. So these type of titles, you can just tell that they observed this and they thought, well, this is just a fluke. This is abnormal still. It's not natural, even though they're literally seeing it in nature, but they can't accept it. So they do report on it, but they report on it in such a way that reconfirms that sort of societal bias. So those are some ways in that this queerness was ignored for centuries. And then this wonderful book that I am going to dive into from 1999 finally went, let's take a look. And I'm just going to read a few excerpts here. But first, let's do a song. I have the Juno's Award. So CBC Music has a blog, and they just posted a Celebrating Pride Month with Canada's Diverse 2S LGBTQ Plus Artists. So I have picked my first one here is by DJSB from Toronto, bringing a fresh perspective to rap as a non-binary artist. And yeah, so this is called Throw That Back. I hope you enjoy.
Man, this shit getting too easy. But yo, I got a question. What do you deserve? What do you deserve from me? What do you deserve? What do you deserve from me? What do you deserve? What do you deserve from me? What do you deserve? Not a goddamn thing. Throw that pitch, dog, and watch me swing. Don't bench me or try to box me in. I don't need you, I got these ends. Just sit back there and watch me win. They try so hard to make me mad. I stay in love and in my bag. All this cash fall right in my lap. It make me feel like life ain't bad, but I know better than that. That nigga's trash, stop letting him rap. I stay up late night, where let him in at? Mad stripes on the cloth, this is veteran rap. I pay dues when needed. Ain't no money in the game, I already know you fools ain't eating. And you ain't on my level, so I know that's fact. My girl, I can all record how she throw that back. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back, ayy. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back. Tryna find a love like BET, throw the track up on a CDG. Tryna say I'm too big for shorts. Bitch ass nigga finna see these knees. Tryna trade me off like I'm CP3, cause they don't wanna see me ballin' on the TV screen. She wrestling the thoughts of me or him. I'll give her man crush Monday a DDT. I just want a crib where they think I can't afford it. Neighbors get mad when they see me in the morning. When I heard your record, I was sleepy, I was snoring. You gon' be mad when you see me in the foreign. Y'all ain't humble, tryna stay face. Career treadmill, just running in place. I don't know how, but I gotta get paid. And she gotta get paid, so I'm in the strip club like, hey. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back, ayy. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back, yeah. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back, yeah. Throw that back, throw that back, I said. Throw that back, my girl like an old record, how she throw that back, yeah. We'll be right back.
You are listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. This is Nerding Out with Laura, and today I am talking about queer nature. But let's see here. I've got some flyers to go through. So, yes, tomorrow, Saturday, June 1st, there's going to be Pride downtown. Go check it out. Then there's also going to be a short drag show, and then there's the after party, and then I think Sunday there's a drag brunch. So I think a lot of tickets are sold out, but you might be able to get them secondhand from someone. Also, we're going to be doing, well, we are doing our membership drive right now, so become a member of CICK, get some cute little bag of art that we have made ourselves with our very own hands, and get discounts at our events throughout the year, and just support your local community radio. We're going to have a rock lottery concert and DJs on Saturday, June 8th. The tickets are $20 in advance or $25 at the door, unless you're a CICK member, in which case they are $15 in advance and $20 at the door. It's an 80s costume party. It's going to be at the Legion. Oh, you can get your tickets at Mountain Eagle Books, as usual. And yeah, so these are going to be a rock lottery, so they're going to, these bands are putting their names in, and they're going to remix the bands, and they're going to play us some songs. So these are one night only bands. So come check it out. Let's see, what else do we got here? Oh, there's an event, Elcon and Rosebush, is Saturday, June 22nd at the Smithers Legion. There is the, ooh, what? The B... J Organic Music? I don't know that one. Okay. 20th anniversary, oh, Music Students Concert, June 10th at 7 p.m. at the Roy. And just going through the list here. Yeah, we're doing our membership drive. So there's going to be a lot of live radio coming up. So next week, listen to the radio. You'll hear a lot of live stuff, not just recorded. There's also a tattoo flash sale. So Ranch House Tattoo is partnering with us. If you are a member, you can get... if you remember... I think just they're donating some money towards CICK with those tattoos. So pretty cool. And they designed a little new logo for us. So thank you, Ranch House Tattoo. Yeah. Oh, here's the Pride stuff at the bottom because that's tomorrow. So 11 to 2:30, Bovell Market and Food. 12 to 2, live entertainment at Bovell. Scouts Honor, Your Favorite Band, Naomi Kavka, Milk and Honey, and River Wild. There's going to be a photo booth, face painting, food trucks. I believe there's a 9 a.m. Story time at the library. There's the special drag short show, 7 to 8 at the Old Church. DJ dance and drag afters party, 9 to 12 at the Old Church. And then the drag brunch at the Roadhouse the next day, 10 a.m. Okay. So that is all of our upcoming stuff. I'm also going to thank a supporter, a sponsor. Let's go for Babine Animal Hospital. We're talking about animals. We love animals, and they take care of our very special animals that are in our families. So thank you, Babine Animal Hospital, located on Railway. So, I've got half an hour left. Let's dive into Biological Exuberance, our animal, homosexuality, and natural diversity book from 1999 by Bruce Bagamil. This book covers examples of homosexual behavior or transgender that have been scientifically documented, including published reports in scientific journals and monographs, and or firsthand observations by zoologists, wildlife biologists, and other trained animal observers, corroborated by multiple sources whenever possible. I'm going to make a note that language is always loaded. No matter how much we try to be objective, there's a lot of connotations that come with it. So this book is back in 2000. I don't see the word queer. I don't believe it was as popular back then. I prefer to use queer. This author notes that they did not choose labels such as gay or lesbian because those are especially burdened with human connotations, both cultural, psychological, historical, and or political, and may not be regarded as appropriate designations for animals. They also point out that the term homosexual is also not devoid of anthropomorphism. It too is a culture-specific historical construction with very particular human connotations. And in fact, a wide variety of terms used routinely in zoological literature, such as courtship, parenting, monogamy, adoption, consortship, all of these carry that same baggage. So we are going to try to use terms that are as neutral as possible. I prefer queer. This book mainly uses homosexual. And hopefully we can be a little more objective in that, at least. And I'm basically going to be just diving into chapter one. As I said, this is a 900-page book. Which chapter one presents a broad overview of animal homosexuality and transgenderness, exploring the full range of behaviors and phenomena. And it also goes more into comparisons of humans and animals in chapter two, the history of the study in chapter three. Chapter four, I'm very interested in, but I don't have time for, which is explaining away animal homosexuality, which examines the many attempts to interpret and determine the function or cause of animal homosexuality, which is a bit of a failure. I do touch on that a little bit later. This book is ultimately a meditation on the nature of life itself, and a celebration of its paradoxes and pluralities. As such, the book seeks not only to convey the facts about animal behavior, but perhaps as importantly, to capture something of their poetry as well. The beauty and mystery of nature can be found in many forms, and one particular form of natural beauty is the diversity of sexuality and gender expression throughout the world. The world is indeed teeming with homosexual, bisexual, and transgendered creatures of every stripe and feather, from the southeastern blueberry bee of the United States to more than 130 different bird species. The birds and the bees are literally queer. For most people, when we say homosexuality, that means one thing, sex. While it's true that animals of the same gender often interact sexually with each other, this is only one aspect of same-sex expression. The full range of homosexual activity found in the animal world can be organized into five major behavioral categories: courtship, affection, sex, pair bonding, and parenting. Now, I'm going to note that I have to try to keep this fairly PG, but we are talking a bit about sex, and we're doing it more in a scientific as nature way. But just to let you know, maybe some awkward questions might come up if your kids are listening. I do encourage them to listen, but be prepared. So let's start with courtship. To attract the attention and interest of a potential partner, animals often perform a series of stylized movements and behaviors prior to mating, sometimes in the form of complex visual or vocal displays, and this is known as courtship behavior. And it usually indicates that one animal is advertising his or her presence to prospective mates or is sexually interested in another individual. If the interest is mutual, this may lead to mating or other activity and possibly pair bonding, especially in birds. Birds are quite fond of bonding monogamously, but not all animals or all birds are doing such things. Some animals also use special courtship behaviors to conclude as well as initiate sexual activity or to reinforce those pair bonds. It's a common feature of heterosexual but also homosexual interactions. In most species, the same courtship behaviors are used in both homosexual and heterosexual interactions. Sometimes, though, it can be the same-sex courtship involves only a subset of the movements and behaviors that are found in the opposite-sex displays. For example, Canada geese, they court each other both heterosexually and homosexually, but they only perform the neck-dipping ritual when it's a same-sex courtship, as opposed to a opposite-sex courtship. They do a special posture at the end of this neck dipping. So if you look at Canada geese, it's kind of hard to tell which are male and female, but if you're watching, you know, their courtship dance, you may notice that some of them do a neck dip and then a special final pose, and some of them might just do some neck dipping, in which case you can tell, oh, those are some same sex couples there. But also very interesting are those creatures that have a special courtship pattern found only in homosexual interactions. For example, male ostriches will perform a unique pirouette dance only when courting other males. And that sounds awesome. I'm going to have to look that up. I love birds dancing. So that is courtship. Then there is pair bonding. So wild animals often form significant pair bonds with animals of the same sex. This homosexual pair bonding takes many different forms, but two broad categories can be recognized. Partners, who engage in sexual or courtship activities with each other, and companions, who are bonded to each other, but do not necessarily engage in overt sexual activity with one another. So an example of a partnership is a mated pair, two individuals who are strongly bonded to one another in a way that is equivalent to heterosexually paired animals of the same species. Partners engage directly in courtship, sexual, and/or parenting behaviors, and they spend a significant amount of time with each other, doing similar activities. Some animals, while not necessarily forming same-sex bonds, do have a preferred or favorite sexual and affectionate partner with whom they tend to interact with more often than others. This is true with bonobos, gorillas, and killer whales, among others. So that is the partnership, the mated pair. And then there's companionship, where two animals of the same sex may bond with each other, often spending most of their time together exclusive of the opposite sex, but they do not necessarily engage in recognizable courtship or sexual activities with each other. For example, older African elephant bulls sometimes form long-lasting associations with a younger attendant male. These animals are loners, and they spend all their time with each other rather than with other elephants. They help each other, but they never engage in sexual activity with each other or heterosexual activity with other female elephants. So it's just these two males, their life partners, or sorry, there I am using the word partner, their life companions. But they aren't trying to mount each other or raise a young elephant together or anything. They're just, companions. And another example is the male calf bird. So two male companions will display and travel together, and they'll sometimes share a home with one another. So this is a special perch known as a retreat, where they spend time away from the rest of the calf birds. These similar same-sex associations are found in other species like orangutans, gray whales, grizzly bears, vampire bats, and superb lyrebirds. We also see pairing up that is not just two animals. So we see a trio in either partnership or companionship form. So like a polyamorous situation here. So this can consist of three animals, all of the same sex, who are bonded with each other, as occasionally happens among female ring-billed gulls and male African elephants, white-tailed deer, and black-headed gulls. These trios can also be bisexual, consisting of two females and one male. For example, in Canada geese, common gulls, and jackdaws, or two males and one female, such as in gray-leg geese, black swans, and sociable weavers. You'll notice there's a lot of birds in this pair bonding, because they are fond of pair bonding. In either form of this bisexual trio, there is significant bonding, courtship, and/or sexual behavior between the two animals of the same sex. This distinguishes such associations from heterosexual trios, in which two animals of the same sex are bonded with an opposite-sexed individual, but not to each other. So you can have heterosexual or homosexual trios. Very, sounds like good fodder for television. Some drama. And these homosexual pair bonds can vary not only in their type, but also in their duration. So usually same-sex bonding is the same sort of pattern as the heterosexual pairing in terms of how long it lasts. In the gray-leg goose, for example, they will remain mated for life, or many, many consecutive years. And the male pairs are also the generally long-lasting or lifelong. Whereas in bison, tending bonds between two males usually last only a few days or hours. In both heterosexual, these bonds between bison last only a few days or hours in both heterosexual and homosexual situations. So long-term pair bonding can involve continuous association throughout the year, or seasonal association. So there's several species of gulls in which females repair with the same female only during mating season, just as the male and females would pair up only during mating season. And in some species, the homosexual pairs are of a shorter duration than the queer pairs may also be of shorter duration than heterosexual ones in some species. The black-headed gull male couples, for example, appear to be more prone to divorce than heterosexual ones. However, in many cases, these queer pairings, particularly companionships, exceed heterosexual ones in their stability and duration. So, for example, among lions and elephants, the bond between male companions is closer and longer lasting than any heterosexual bonds, which are usually virtually non-existent beyond mating, while mated gander pairs and gray-leg geese are often more strongly bonded than heterosexual pairs. In a number of animals, the only pair bonds that occur are homosexual, not heterosexual. So male bottlenose dolphins, for example, will form lifelong partnerships with each other, while males and females in this species do not generally pair bond with another at all. Other animals with same-sex but not opposite-sex pairings, often in the form of companionships, include musk oxen, wapiti, white-tailed deer, warthogs, cheetahs, eastern gray kangaroos, red squirrels, and calf birds. So all of those animals don't really form heterosexual pair bonds, but they do form queer homosexual ones. Well, I'm going to play one more song, and then we'll go into some of our other behaviors, such as affection and parenting in queer nature. And hopefully we'll be able to touch a little bit on gender in the natural world before we end today. So our next song up is The Man I Love by Matthew V., a Canadian from, doesn't say where he's from, but yeah, it's a nice sort of lounge, jazzy type music that I guess, you know, you don't usually hear these type of lyrics. So enjoy The Man I Love by Matthew V.
Someday you'll come along. The man I love, he'll be big and strong. The man I love, and when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. Smile, I understand. it seems absurd. I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I shall meet him someday.
You are listening to Nerding Out with Laura on CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. And we are talking about queer ecology, looking at queerness in nature. So we left off with pair bonds, and the next category is affectionate behaviors. So many animals of the same sex will touch each other in ways that are not overtly sexual, such as grooming, embracing, kissing, play fighting, but these nevertheless have clear sexual or erotic overtones. For example, male lions will head rub and roll around with each other before having sex together. In stumptail and bonnet macaques, a pair of males often sleep together in a front-to-back position, so they spoon, with one male wrapping his arms around the other and even sometimes holding on to his partner's penis. A similar sleeping arrangement occurs in male walruses, who often sleep in same-sex pairs or even extended chains of males, all clasping each other in a front-to-back position as they float at the water's surface. And beyond sex, there is parenting. So same-sex pairs in many species, especially birds, will raise young together. Not only are these competent parents, but these queer pairs sometimes actually will exceed heterosexual ones in the number of eggs they lay, the size of their nests, or the skill and extent of their parenting. So back at our original gull study, the first thing that the researchers kind of clued into was that these some of the nests had double the amount of eggs. And at first they thought, oh, this female's like producing way too many eggs. What's wrong with this female? Until they realized it was two females. So double the eggs. But how are these animals able to have offspring if they're in homosexual associations? Well, there's a lot of different strategies. One common parenting arrangement is in the gull especially, or in tern and goose species, one or both female partners will copulate with a male to fertilize her eggs, but they do not bond or associate with that male beyond that coupling, and then they have the fertilized eggs to raise with their female partner. Or in the opposite, with black swans, the established male homosexual pairs will sometimes temporarily associate with a female, mating with her to father their own offspring. And once those eggs are laid, then the female leaves and the male raises them. So very cute sounding instances of parenting. Sometimes they will raise young where they're not the biological parents. They'll adopt. So, for example, two female northern elephant seals will occasionally adopt and co-parent an orphaned pup. Male hooded warblers and black-headed gulls may adopt eggs or entire nests that have been abandoned by females. And even pairs of male cheetahs occasionally look after lost cubs. And I just love that. I want a documentary on the I want to see those two male cheetahs adopting a lost cub and raising it. And, you know, often there are alternative family arrangements. There don't have to be just two parents. It can be a group of several males or females living together. There are gorillas. The babies will grow up in mixed-sex polygamous groups where their mothers may have lesbian interactions with each other, while woodpeckers will live and raise their young in communal breeding groups where many, if not all, of those group members engage in courtship and sexual activities with one another, which are both same-sex and opposite-sex. And so lots of different families out there. There's all the colors of the rainbow. And I want to talk a bit more about just the proportion of queerness in nature. So with this book, they were estimating that the proportion of animal species exhibiting these homosexual behaviors comes in at about 15-30%. So that's a significant chunk, but the percentage is probably higher than that. And I imagine there's been more publications in the last 24 years. Percentage we're at now in 2024 is probably still low because it's so easy to misbehavior. So if you think about heterosexual mating, a behavior that is known to occur in all mammals and birds, it has to, or the species will not continue. And it has to happen with great regularity, right? But for many species, we have never seen this happen. So despite literally thousands of hours of observations made by biologists over many years in the West Indies, Hawaii, and elsewhere, the actual copulation in humpback whales was yet to be observed. So we know that humpback whales must have heterosexual sex with each other to create their babies, but no biologists ever saw it happen. And so you could take that to mean that it doesn't happen, but we know it must. So what I'm saying is there's probably a lot of queerness that we just don't observe because, you know, we can't attach a camera to these animals. Well, I guess we can now, but it's even hard to tell, right? Sometimes it happens so quick. So I just want to put that caveat in there. And also that humans will bring in biases about genders with male or female. Are the males doing this queerness more or are the females? Well, it really goes all over the place. So They say, whether it's ganders and geese or ruffs and reeves, whether it's bodos and bonobos or pukas and pukeko, male and female homosexuality can be either surprisingly similar to each other or decidedly distinctive from one another. So in some species, such as silver gulls, oh, there's my 12 o'clock alarm. I'm going to go a bit over. The male and female homosexualities conform to stereotypes commonly held about similar human behaviors. The females form stable, long-lasting lesbian pair bonds and raise families, while the males participate in promiscuous homosexual activity. But in other species, these stereotypes are turned around, such as black swans, where only males form long-term same-sex couples and raise offspring, whereas the sage grouse, only females engage in apparently group orgies of homosexual activity. So it's not just that males are out having all the sexual activity where the females are pair bonding and raising. It could be either or. It could be both of them do. It could be one or the other. It's fluid. So that is what I really want you to take away, is that nature doesn't care what humans think about the naturalness or unnaturalness of their behavior. They do it anyway. And so we need to open our eyes, and to really understand the world, we need to accept that there are all types and beings, all types of relationships, all types of parenting, all types of genders. I was not able to get into genders today. I think I'll do another episode and focus a little more on that, because the world is quite transgender as well. I hope to see you tomorrow at Pride, and I am going to sign off now. Enjoy your Friday.